Welcome back to RBKD. We are looking live amongst the people on a Country Music Friday edition of the show. You can always follow us via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. My man Kevin Dunn is at KevinDunn01. John back there at the compound, twisting and tweaking the dials. Hit him up at JS Reichel. Jeff Howe joining us as well on the show at Jeff Howe 247.
Yep.
Boom.
Horns 24/7.
Knew I knew that.
Life Tower. Our long-term venture, Rod, Longhorn Blitz Podcast. We've been doing that thing almost a full decade now.
Have y'all really?
This makes me feel old. Yeah.
It sounds like it.
It's been around a long, long time.
As Matt Butler and I like to say, Kevin, Rod's the guest who just never left. we invite, hey, Rod, you want to come do a couple shows? Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
and then it's
sure.
9 years later, we're still...
Oh, it started that
up.
Way?
Still shacked up, man.
Diving through Texas football misery together.
Well, thank God. I think, you know what? And thank God, we needed each other.
I like
the last 10 years.
Good
10 years have been
to
tough.
Pick.
We need the support of friendship during that time.
I like to think where the Blitz is, it's like a therapy session on the couch for Longhorn fans.
I don't know, man. It's so crazy that we started and then the program went downhill, at least the football program.
Well, it already started, though, so
it already
you can't
started.
Completely blame us.
No, that's true.
If you want to blame anybody, blame Horns 24/7. We launched in August of 2010, so.
Oh, man.
You and LHN.
Ouch.
You guys in LHN. Between y'all.
Picked a great time to launch
great
the
time
Texas
to launch.
Site.
Well, yep. You guys are doing great work over
Thanks,
there at
Ron,
Horns 24/7, man. We are out here at Craft House Kitchen and Tap. They're doing great work as well.
Mm-hmm.
And my man KD just had some of the, with the tuna?
Tuna.
Okay.
Why aren't you going to have
thoughts.
The tuna?
Give me your thoughts.
It's really good.
Fantastic.
Wasabi to go with it. A little wasabi sauce.
Oh, that's the hot stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Nah,
that Asian
that.
Hot stuff.
Is it the green
It's green,
stuff?
Though.
I know, is that the green
But it's
stuff?
Not verde sauce.
No, I've had some okay. of the wasabi before. Yeah, a little tiny bit of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you can tell. It's getting me a little bit. It's opened up my allergies, though.
Mm-hmm,
I'll take that.
Yeah. See, so there you go, tuna. Jeff, are you a fan of the tuna? What do you get when you come here?
Yeah, not,
come...
the not the wasabi, though. I can't be getting the bubble guts on the air.
There you go. You don't want the bejesus. That's not going to help you on a Friday.
No, food here is great.
Food here is fantastic. Okay, let's get to some Texas, speaking of the bubble guts, Texas football. A lot of Longhorn fans and players. Players played like they had the bubble guts against Arkansas.
Yeah, man.
Maybe that was a big excuse, but no excuse for them this week. They got to play against Rice. Jeff, I'll open the floor up to you. What are your thoughts? What do you want to see in this matchup? What have you been focused on in your prep for this matchup versus Rice?
I like the fact, and I asked Sark about this yesterday in the media availability. I like the fact that Rice, just looking at the Texas offense, because we'll get to the Texas defense, and
yeah,
I don't want to say they're going to be fine, but I'll give you some hope that tells you they can get it turned around. But when I look at the Texas offense against the Rice defense, patience is going to be key. Because Rice can throw multiple looks at you. They mm-hmm. will throw multiple looks at
oh, yeah.
you. And
they're wicked smart.
Yeah, that's what they do.
They're wicked smart.
They're going to make Casey Thompson think pre-snap. They're going to make this offensive line communicate. And, Rod, there are two things that Rice is going to do that this offense will see until they prove they can handle it. One is they're going to play an odd front with a lot of movement up front
mm-hmm.
until this offensive line proves they can handle it.
Games.
And they're going to be physical with you on the outside and play man coverage until this group of receivers, they'll see that until they prove they can go in one-on-one on the outside. I like Jordan Whittington in the slot, and I like the guys that they can put in the slot. Even Joshua Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Go look at Joshua Moore's numbers last year. He was way more productive
yeah.
on a snap-to-snap basis when he was in the slot as opposed to lining up outside. Do they have guys that can go win on the outside? And right now, you would have to say no, they don't. Now, could Troy O'Meara help some of that? Maybe, but Troy O'Meara is not going to be available in this game again. So those are the two things. Can you manipulate man coverage, and can you handle the movement you're going to see up front with the offensive line? Texas has more talent than Rice. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
But schematically, it's going to be a really good test to see, okay, this offense is going to get back on the horse. Can they handle all of what Rice is going to throw at them? Because you're going to see a lot of that in Big 12 play because the Gary Pattersons and the John Haycocks and the Alex Grinches of the world, Alex Grinch was the one who exploited Texas in the first place. They're prepared to throw at you what they're going to throw at you and say,
yeah.
Hey, you guys can't handle this. This is what we're going to go do to you.
I want to ask you about O'Meara, but some good stuff there. And just in general, Texas, I mean, we, you know, Rod and I, even after, and you've said it as well, after Louisiana, yeah, you've proven it once, but all the stuff that I'm looking at with personnel-wise with Texas from the last couple years, you got to throw that out, right? You still have to press the corner, press the receivers. Yeah. If they beat you, they beat you. You got to twist and stunt. There are things to do, also things to do offensively against Texas. They haven't really cleaned up that much. As you kind of look forward towards this week, are you surprised? I mean, it fits Rice because they do play a lot of man, but usually when you think about Rice and their secondary and that wicked smart thing that Rod's talking about, you don't think about bowing up on the outside.
No, but they will. They'll do it. And, you know, their corners, they had just a rash of injuries at corner last year, so they had some young corners get thrown into the fire. You know, the guy for them that kind of makes their defense go, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds into Rice prep, but the guy that kind of makes their defense go, Treshawn Chamberlain, he's a guy that plays, they call it the Viper position. It's similar to the star position in the Texas defense. Basically, it's basically your nickel defender.
Mm-hmm.
He had a situation where he left the Arkansas game, got carted off the field in an air cast, actually came back and played the Houston game, suffered a leg injury. So it sounds like he's not going to be available to go in this game. So they're going to be a little deficient from a personnel standpoint. But, Kevin, they really like their safeties. And I said the corners – I got some really good experience last year at corner. So, this is a defense that they're not going to play exclusively man. They're not going to go like Dave Aranda LSU and just go man you up the whole time. But they will mix it in there. And, again, I expect Texas to see it until they prove they can get by it.
Yeah.
Name Smith, also George Nyakual. I think I'm saying that right. I haven't looked at their pronunciations
yet. Got to be correct.
It's got to be correct.
Sean French at corner is the guy Rice people really like.
It's actually Nicole Wall, but he's one of those guys. They return a lot of people, and you talk about a guy missing on defense there. Quickly, Troy O'Meary. I know Texas fans have been asking me how serious is this. We talk about the Texas receivers. They can use as much help as they can get on the outside. What are you hearing about O'Meary, and is it – the surgery wasn't good? The rehab wasn't good? Is it completely separate? What is it?
I think at this point it's separate. It got to be a confidence issue with him and just kind of working his way back, and then he kind of tweaked it a little bit in that open practice. So the deal for him, though, aside from the injury, that is going to be pivotal for him, and I think everybody just expects, okay, Troy O'Meary's back, put him in the mix, and now you've got a 6'3", 220-pound receiver that can go win on the outside. Not so fast, my friend, because one of the things that we had heard at Horns 24/7 was throughout camp up until the injury, he was kind of Brendan Eagles 2.0 and not in a good way. Kind of guy that might not be paying attention in meetings, might draw the ire of the staff for maybe being a half step slow going through drills, maybe carried himself a little bit higher than he should. So there's some maturity that has to take place on his part as well. I think everybody would love to see the Troy O'Meary that we all heard about before the injury last year in camp when he was working ahead of Brandon Eagles and was like, oh, my gosh, you know, you were thinking about when's the last time you saw a Texas wide receiver this early assert himself. I mean, you're going back to guys like Arada, a guy you play with like
– Kwame Cavill.
Well, some of the stuff you heard about like with Roy Williams, not to say that Troy O'Meary's that good, but a young receiver that just – I'm coming in here, I'm taking somebody's job.
Yeah.
It was one of those deals. And then he had the injury, and it's just been – a long year plus now for him to get back. But I think there's some confidence that's got to be built back, but also some maturity on his part that's got to be there when he comes back.
Yeah. No, it's the wide receiving core, and this is one thing I think Sark's got to do, and he hasn't done it since he's been here. But I know it was one of his key concepts at Alabama. You're talking about position fluidity, right? Because even Devontae Smith said the biggest difference between Sark's offense and, you know, the offense, you know, prior to Sark being there was that Sark decided that he would make wide receivers or force them to learn all the different positions so they would be able to be interchangeable, right, from down to down within the system. And we haven't really seen that. I mean, Jordan Whittington's been your slot guy, and Joshua Moore and, you know, Xavier Worthy have been the guys on the outside. I think we saw some more bunch formations versus Arkansas, but it didn't matter because the passing game couldn't get going.
Right.
I do wonder if you could help the guys on the outside by just moving them around more. Put Jordan Whittington in the backfield, right? Start him out of the backfield and then move those, have those other guys motion while you shift him out of the backfield. Why can't he run a route out of the backfield?
Well,
it'll match up. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm just saying, if you're looking for ways to free up wide receivers, well, Joshua Moore works better from the slot. So put him in the slot, all right? And why can't Jordan Whittington work on the outside? He's a little stronger, probably may hold up a little bit better, at least in some situations. Or at least, why don't you, you know, use those guys in a more fluid manner in terms of the positional flexibility so that you can scheme them open a little bit more. Because right now, I got to tell you, it's looking more like the Tom Herman offense in terms of your philosophy on using wide receivers. We were told that position fluidity was something that he would use a lot.
Yeah.
Hadn't used it yet.
Something you've talked about this week, too, I know both of you guys have. Make your motions matter. When you motion and shift, make it matter. Like when you send a guy in orbit motion behind the quarterback, throw him a swing pass.
There has to be a threat there.
Yeah, if you're showing jet motion, throw him the little forward flip pass. Like run a jet sweep out of it. You got to do something. Otherwise, it's just window dressing. It means nothing.
You totally agree.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I've talked about it. Sean McVay, even when he doesn't want to and doesn't think it's going to work, will give to that jet sweep. Otherwise, because that's how you fan out of defense and actually create creases and create holes within your scheme to open stuff up for an offensive line that can use some fanning.
I know Sean McVay and Shano lead the NFL in wide receiver rushing yards the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, that's a staple for them. It not only forces the defense to play everything honest, but you have to build now in your defensive game plan. Who's going to account for the motion guy? Every play. Who accounts for the motion guy? Or motion, fly motion, jet motion. Somebody's got to get him. And that's one less guy out of the box. So it is. It's very intentional. Yeah, it's very intentional motion. And honestly, I've watched Sark's offense prior to him coming to Texas. And all of the motion did seem to have a purpose. It doesn't seem to have a purpose here at Texas. Those guys, once they go in motion, they're usually out of the play. Arkansas gave them 7-8 yards. Dude, I've seen Rojo break tackles in the open field like that. I've seen Bijan break tackles in the open field like that. I know Jay Witt can break tackles in the open field like that. Why not toss it all to him? That's a one-on-one. Your guy needs to win. That's football. That's what you're supposed to do as offensive coordinator. All you're doing is creating one-on-ones. Advantageous one-on-ones matchups so your guys can win. That's a one-on-one. Throw it to him. I haven't seen a lot of RPOs either, by the way. There have been some. But I was told that Sark ran RPOs more than anybody else in college football.
I haven't seen
a ton of them.
I'll say this too, Rod. This goes back to Max time here, and we saw it with Charlie Strong and Tom Herman. Sometimes it takes getting your head kicked in to make an adjustment.
Yeah.
And I know that's frustrating for Longhorn fans.
I was about to say that.
But if we see a different offense, and Rod, some of the stuff we're talking about, make your motions and shifts matter, use more bunch formations, get guys on the move, help your offensive line. Kevin, I know you and I are big proponents of men. Run your pin pulls, your gap schemes. Don't just be so reliant on one concept running the football and hamstring yourself. You don't have the 2005 Texas offensive line.
No.
You don't have that kind of offensive line. You need to help them out in multiple ways. So if I'm a Texas fan, what I would tell a Texas fan, all the things we're talking about, Jeff, what kind of offense do you want to see? The 2011 offense with Brian Harsin, that might be the best Texas offense in my lifetime of making chicken salad out of you-know-what. Like, they had two inexperienced quarterbacks, but an offensive line that was okay, not great. But what did Brian Harsin do? He found Fozzie Whitaker in the Wildcat. He started to make use of Marquise Goodwin. They made use of the tight ends that they had. They used a lot of motions, a lot of shifts, a lot of funk, as he called it, using that to set up your shot plays. That's where Sark has to get really creative and realize, look, you're not just going to go play bully ball and just do what you do. You got to be creative. And as frustrating as it would be for Texas fans to see that against Rice when you didn't see it against Arkansas, at least if you start to see it and it's going in that direction, that'll be a good thing on Saturday.
You don't need to be that, though. You have Bijan. You know, the whole point of the show about nothing offense for Brian Harsin, it was kind of the Seinfeld offense, right? It was a show about nothing. It didn't have an identity, and he wanted it that way. But I think it was almost out of necessity because they didn't really have a key figure. They didn't have any game changer on the offense. So it's like, well, I got a lot of guys, some Jags, some Jabronis. I'll makeshift it, right? I'll moneyball it. When you got a Bijan, the offense, the identity is Bijan. Everything should be built around trying to weaponize and maximize his presence.
I agree with that, but you're still scheming around an offensive line.
My point is, it's not necessarily the same because Bijan still has to be the focus. It can't be the show about nothing. That was the whole point of that offense. It was a show about nothing. It had no identity. You never knew week to week what it was going to be. Because it was matchup based, but also because they didn't have a game changer. You have a game changer. You got a game changer. You can't go to the show about nothing. You've got to build it around that guy.
And then I was speaking more out of just the motions and shifts and doing different things and getting creative to free up your guys. I'm with you. line Bijan Robinson up in the slot. We saw that against Louisiana, them moving him around a little bit. Expand on that. I thought their best personnel group against Arkansas was 20 personnel. And if you want to go 21 and put the tight end there, great. But
you're spreading it out.
I think your offense is best right now when you've got Bijan Robinson and Roschon Johnson on the field together.
We saw that. We saw Roschon with some lead blocks, too, to where it's only going to help out.
And he can
out.
Give you that.
Yeah,
he can give you that.
He can give you that. That should not be an issue, though, in this Rice game. I like how, I mean, we're talking overview, and I like that.
You're right.
We do that a lot on
right.
the show.
Yeah.
But that's also going to be the point of this game, guys, that there's only so much you can take away unless it's really negative.
Yeah.
True. But that said, I mean, as you talk about the offense, we haven't talked Casey Thompson yet. That's one thing that I don't think anybody should take for granted. Casey Thompson's in a position this week he's never been in. He's never been told at the beginning of the week, you're the starting quarterback, you're going to get all the number one reps in practice, and you're going to prepare to go out on the field and take the first snap in the game on Saturday. When all 11 guys on the other side of the ball, they've been game planning all week, and that defensive coordinator's been game planning on, how do we make your life hell? They want to take your head off. He's never been in that position. So, again, I would stress patience for the offense early because I would think Rice is going to throw a whole lot of stuff at him, see what he can handle in his first start. So, patience offensively, I think, Kevin, is going to be huge for this team.
Man, yeah. Longhorn fans aren't as patient.
No, they're not.
They're not. All right, we'll get back to some of that conversation. Let me tell you my friends at Honda real quick. Right now, the Honda Summer Sales event is happening. Right now, that means you can save big on a brand new Honda, folks. There's so many great award-winning Hondas in the 2021 class. You're sure to find one that will fit you and your family, whether it be the new Honda Accord, the new Honda Pilot, the new Honda CR-V, the new Honda Civic. There's something for everyone in the Honda family. So go test drive one of those brand new Hondas today at your local Central Texas Honda dealers during the Honda Summer Sales event happening right now. And there's a lot of great new technology in those new award-winning Hondas, like the Apple CarPlay, the Android Auto, the wireless charging, the lane assist, and the backup camera, and of course the Honda Sensing, which is their suite of safety feature and driver-assisted technology. It makes you feel safe anytime you're on the road in a Honda or behind the wheel of a Honda. So right now, go test drive that 2021 Honda Accord. It's loaded with features. It's also the most advanced Accord ever. Safe, reliable, and groundbreaking all at the same time. How about that 2022 Honda Civic? Impressive power, nimble handling, and innovative technology. The perfect car for any drive. So shop simple, but save big. Right now, during the Honda Summer Sales event happening at First Texas Honda at Howdy Honda, Round Rock Honda, or Honda San Marcos, or go online at CentralTexasHondaDeals.com. See dealer for details.
Jeff, what's your take on the offensive line and personnel? Because we came in on Monday and Rod and I said, you know, we could actually get to quarterbacks on Tuesday. We're going to get to them on Monday because we know our fan base, but there are a lot of other issues. I would start with the offensive line. Do you expect to see any different rotations, I mean, during competitive time with Carrick?
Here's
the question on Monday, by the way.
Here's the problem. Yeah, and I wanted to ask Sark that question because, unfortunately, I kind of knew his answer. When we got into camp and started observing this offensive line, and Hayden Connor quickly is working with the second team. And then that's no disrespect to Hayden Connor. Props to him for going and taking somebody's job. I took that as a bad sign because that means where is Tyler Johnson? Where is Tope Amade, who we heard so much about throughout the offseason?
Isaiah Hookfin.
Isaiah Hookfin was hurt again, which is kind of his deal. It's not a talent issue with him. He just can't stay healthy. So all these guys we had heard about, it's Hayden Connor that's getting snaps. And I asked Sark about the two guys I asked him about were Andre Carrick and Hayden Connor. And, Kevin, I don't know that they have anybody else they trust to put on the field right now. Because the only backup offensive lineman that has taken a snap in the first two games, Hayden Connor got 8 snaps in the Louisiana game when Junior Aguilar hurt his knee. That's it. So what that tells me throughout spring ball, and they got Kerstetter back for camp, there are 5 guys they trust to put on the field right now. And those are the 5 guys that are starting on the offensive line. I know that's not what fans want to hear, but that's where it is right now. But going back to what we talked about, okay, if you know the deal, you know what you got. If you're Steve Sarkisian, you've got to do a much better job of scheming around it than you did on Saturday against Arkansas.
Agreed. It's going to be an issue all year long, though.
Yeah.
And for the people that thought that was not going to be an issue and could not take down everything, running game and passing game, we know how important that is.
I knew, and I'd heard when he got here and started working with this offensive line, Kyle Flood knew he had a lot of work to do. And a lot of it was rebuilding a lot of bad technique, fixing a lot of bad habits. He's got a steeper hill to climb than even I thought he did, and I thought it was pretty damn steep to begin with.
Why not go to the transfer portal then?
If it's that desperate,
this is my problem right now with Sark and Coughlin. You just came from Bama.
Yeah.
You just came from the most talented football roster in the history of college football. So it's not like you don't have a comparison to compare these Texas guys. So you got it right there. And that's the best, right? That's the top guys. You had access to them, and you trained them. You developed them. And now you come to Texas, and you assume that this offensive line, who we've been looking at for 3 years, and any Longhorn fan on the street could have told you, they're going to be bad.
Yeah.
They're going to be bad. I mean, you can watch film. And you also watched film.
Yep.
You watched film on this team last year and decided, we got this. I got this. That is a little bit of arrogance because you should have hit that transfer portal. You went there for offensive outside linebackers.
Mm-hmm.
You went there for a running back. You know, you went there for certain things, and you didn't go for an offensive lineman. That's a little troubling.
I was screaming for it all spring because I don't trust this offensive line. What's troubling is, the hubris you talk about, but within that, to get to that hubris is the evaluation. And that's how I look at coaching staffs. How can you evaluate? I know they can evaluate tens. I want to know, because we got a lot more fours and fives, do you know the difference between a four and a five and a six and a seven? You know a ten.
Yeah, a Bama 10 is different from a Texas 10.
No, that's who I was talking about. That's who I'm talking about.
Our tens are different from the Bama
10s. They go from a Bama 10 and all of a sudden go to Texas, and it's like, whoa, what?
Yeah.
I don't even know this.
A 10 at Texas might be a 7 at Bama.
Yeah. It's like changing state lines.
It is. It's like a Dearborn, Michigan 10
right.
in Austin. She's a 6.
Yeah. Go to Brazil and she's a 2.
Exactly.
I think it's twofold, right? I think one, they did look in the portal, and I don't think saw anything to their liking, which you can say, okay, there wasn't anything to their liking, or maybe you should have looked a little harder, but that was what it was.
Not to your liking or not an upgrade?
That's a good point.
Either or. I know they kicked the tires on some guys in the portal, but they never really made a push for anybody in the portal for transfer offensive linemen. And two, I think Kyle Flood came in here and looked at some guys, some of the Tyler Johnsons and the Isaiah Hookfins and the Andre Carricks of the world, guys that were fairly to pretty highly rated guys coming out of high school, and said, I can work with these young guys and build something. The problem there is now you've already got a young guy like Hayden Connor who's passed some of those guys. Mm. And you've got a guy like Andre Carrick who – you want to get him on the field, but now you've got to shuffle some things into you kick Kirsch that are inside and move somebody out. So, it's a bad situation that suddenly is a lot worse than I thought it was going to be. And Rod, we talked about it all offseason. I said the ceiling for this offensive line for me was if by the end of the year, if they're in the top half of the Big 12, then I think that was a good year for this line.
Yeah.
Guys, that's not a very high ceiling.
No.
And they're really – I hate using this phrase because I feel like I overuse it. They're really going to have to work together, push that boulder up the hill just to get there, to get to the top half. So it's – Kyle Flood had a lot of work in front of him, but he's got a lot more than I thought he had.
Yeah.
I tell you this, if priority number one isn't offensive linemen in the transfer portal, specifically offensive tackles, and there's not a close second. Like, basically, they need to treat offensive line in the transfer portal this offseason like they treated outside linebacker this last year.
I agree. Yep, no doubt.
Jeff Howe joining us, RBKD, Craft House Kitchen and Tap, Nelson Shopping Center, 242 North LBJ Drive.
Hey! Got some support over here.
Got him away.
Nice.
Get on out here. This is a cool spot. Food's good. We've already tried some of the food, and lots of people are just kind of hanging out. They got tons of daiquiris. Not Slurpees. Daiquiris,
adult
Trevor.
Slushies. Adult slushies. As my man Trevor likes to call them.
Get on out here. We're going to be out here until 6:30. Jeff's going to be joining us. Up next, we'll get into some one and done because watch the Mets documentary, and it was pretty good, the 30 for 30. But it just always reminds me how far we've come just with talent alone in all three of the sports I love. We'll get into that in one and done up next.
Like that five-star recruit at Kentucky, he's been here, and he's going to stay here. It's one-and-done time. Here's Kevin Dunn.
One and done time. Kevin Dunn here with Rod Babers. Jeff Howe hanging out. Craft House Kitchen and Tap. It is Nelson Shopping Center, 242 North LBJ Drive. If you're in San Marcos or if you're near, come on out and say hi. Jeff lives in San Marcos, and this worked out well. Usually you're driving a lot, so it's cool that you were able to come out here and actually not drive too far.
Hey, Trip.
You got me?
There we go.
I'm about somewhere between 5 and 10 minutes from the house.
Beautiful.
So, yeah. I could ride a bike down here, but anybody that's seen me knows I'm not a big fan of riding bikes, so just drive over here.
I would have loved to have seen that, though.
Yeah, nobody needs to see that.
No, I think we all need to see that. If you listen, obviously, we try and have fun on this show, and I certainly, if you've got a closed mind, you can paint me into the old man picture. Actually, no, I'll give you a lot of material for that, so you can have some fun with that.
But the reality is that
there's many shades to me, Rod. And
that's true.
I think Rod is figuring that out now.
I agree with that.
He knew it a little bit.
He's a very eclectic individual.
Yes. And also, when I look at sports, really the three that I love, they've just gotten better and better, but drastically better just with the athletic talent. I talk about it in the NBA a lot. We can talk about different styles in all three sports, football, basketball, and baseball, and at all levels. John, you can go and pop that down now, brother. As much as I love Tupac, appreciate it. Yeah. But the reality is that it's just changed, completely changed, really in the last 15, 20 years. And you never know, because I try and take an overview with sports and look at it like a historical timeline. So 200 years is not a long time to
right.
me. In so my lifetime, though, the talent level at all three levels, throwing 102 miles per hour compared to what I was watching last night. I went through the whole Mets documentary, the 30 for 30, four parts. Really good stuff. I watched actually part three and four, so I went the other way because that's when it really started to heat up. And when they got to the Red Sox series, you're seeing Clemens, and he's got gas. You're seeing Bruce Hurst with a 2.99 ERA, who's a lefty. And I remember Bruce Hurst. I remember watching baseball then and thinking these guys are throwing incredibly hard.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Gerrit Cole right now, he would throw 7 no-hitters. And I'm not the type of guy that usually says that.
Right.
I try and have some balance with eras. And football is the biggest difference, Jeff, because of strength and size. Yeah. So when people called and said, 69 Texas team against 05, we're getting ambulances, okay?
Yeah.
And I love 69 team. Baseball, though, usually can translate. I think Mickey Mantle and Ted Williams would hit right now.
Yeah.
But most of the hitters back then, if they faced 99 with a breaking ball and that type of command, they thought 94 and 95 was too much at times.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Now, how many guys – I mean, it almost feels like now you can't make it to the big leagues unless you're 94, 95.
Oh, yeah. Dylan Peters is a lefty who's throwing low 90s. Craig texts me because of his hair and said, can't believe this is Dylan Peters and is with the Pirates. And he said, his changeup is still filthy.
Yeah.
And Dylan knew how to pitch. And I said, what's the velo? He goes, low 90s. And I laughed. I thought, that's the minimum that he could be. Mm-hmm. That is the equivalent of me saying 20 years ago, what is Jamie Moyer throwing? He's throwing 86, but his changeup's nasty, and he knows how to spot and knows how to pitch. Like I mean, it's not complete. You know, it doesn't work all the way to where you could say every guy in the major leagues now would be a success back then. But pitching-wise, these guys that really have high velo, Rod, I would love to see them face a 1986 lineup.
And is that because the sport kind of organically de-emphasizes athleticism and emphasizes skill more than some of the other sports, or is that what it is?
I think that could be some of it.
And that you can play it as you get older because you can refine a skill?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think that's some of it, but a lot of it, too, is just the sport in general. You can kind of get away with that.
Well, I think you see more power pitchers, too, now, Kevin, because of the way it's structured where – you know, you look at, like, some of the complete games of, like, look at some of Nolan Ryan's complete games he had in the year.
Yeah.
Or Clemens' complete games. Your power pitchers, your power arms just don't get taxed like that anymore.
Hmm.
Back ends, to where you really see it, go look at the back ends of bullpens then and now, with like in the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
Like, that's where, to me, where it's a night and day difference.
That's another thing that stood out about the documentary is that there were times where I thought, go to the bullpen. Mm-hmm. And they're just living or dying with guys.
Yep.
And you think about that whole Houston series. I'm going to get into that here in a second. But it brought to me an overview of sports in general in my lifetime. And the reality is that we've seen maybe what could be a 50 or 60 year window for most industries or most things in life. Especially we're talking about a lot of this is evolution. So I know there's more people on the planet and there's more people from the entire planet that are actually playing in our Major League, NBA, NFL, American sports. But a lot of it, too, is science. There's clearly nutrition involved.
Yep.
There's weight training. There's just a lot of things that go into it. But it's pretty crazy that there are this many guys that are throwing 100-plus. I've given this stat to Rod before, so I don't want to beat it to death too much. But
it's a great stat.
I think it's one of these stats that you can. So in 1989, the average fastball, Jeff, was 87 miles per hour.
Yeah, because how many guys were throwing real gas, like Nolan, Clemens?
Right.
You could probably count them on one hand.
And maybe a Rob Dibble coming out of the pen.
Yeah.
But there weren't a lot of those guys. And honestly, a lot of those guys didn't necessarily have the command of other pitches. I mean, the Walker Buehler would terrorize some of those lineups back in the day. 98 with a lot of movement with my breaking balls. Arm speed's the same with the changeup. I mean, it's changed. And also, so I try, you know, the NBA, I think, and basketball in general, it's so obvious. I understand a lot of the people from probably my generation and older that say stylistically there are a lot of things they don't like about baseball, actually. It's too three outcome, you know, determined now. You know, home run, strikeout, or a walk.
Yeah.
Basketball, clearly, we've lost a lot of the inside game, a lot of the mid-range game, but seeing some of these freaks go up and down the court and what they can do at their size, we just didn't see that, guys, back in the day. In the NFL, clearly guys are bigger, stronger, and faster. I think the rules have maybe taken away just how visible that would be for us because they've taken a lot of the violence out.
Yeah.
But you know where we see it? The body awareness. First off, some of the windows that these quarterbacks are not only anticipating, but
phenomenal.
Then fitting stuff through.
Really,
and I'm talking about
really.
Taylor Heinicke last night.
Yeah, but
right?
And a lot of that is training, though, right?
A lot of that's
the
training.
Quarterback coaches they have now, the quarterback clinics and camps they have now.
Yeah.
They're just learning at an earlier age.
I hate to
spread,
say it. They're
spread babies.
As a guy who played three sports growing up and wants everyone to play three sports, there is some truth to, you know what? No, I was at a quarterback camp from eighth grade on, and that's all I did, and I didn't do anything else.
It's called Westlake High School.
I know.
It's called Westlake
Trust
football.
Me. I saw it. I get it. I get
that's
it.
Why you're into it. You've seen it at work. It works.
I've seen it at work.
It works.
I've seen
man.
It works, but I also wanted guys to be able to play three sports back then and nowadays, Jeff.
And I think speaking of football and the state we're in, kids at such a younger age understand football conceptually way before even like my era did.
Yeah.
We're all about the same age. I mean, Rod, I was still running like a wing T offense in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got kids that are fourth, fifth grade on their Pop Warner teams. They understand spread formations and spread concepts and spread passing concepts and, you know, diverse blocking concepts. So that way, by the time they get to high school, you know, if you're Todd Dodge at Westlake or Hank Carter or Lake Travis, you got so many kids in your program, you don't have time to teach conceptual football. You either got to know it or you don't. So I think in that proliferates from high school to college to the NFL where, Rod, I know you've talked about it a lot, the crossover between college football and what you see on Sundays, man, it's not that drastically different when you watch one product to the other.
No, it's actually more and more starting to look more and more similar.
Yeah.
The crossover ideas, the hybridism. Yeah.
So because of the NFL, because of the rule change, because, I mean, trust me, we would notice – how much more physical this was if they were letting them play like it was in 85 because you would have some car wrecks with 4-4 guys
well,
that are 6'5", 260 on kickoff.
I'll tell you when it changed. As a Cowboys fan, the bad Roy Williams, the OU Roy Williams. Roy Williams in another era is a Hall of Fame player at safety. But you look at that moment like where he broke T.O.'s leg with the horse collar tackle in like the first 3 or 4 years of his career, that's when all the rules changed.
Yeah.
So Roy Williams went from the course of his career in about a 5-year stretch
it kicked
from
him
being
out.
An all-pro player to being out of the league. He didn't fit
right.
In like a 4-year stretch.
Yep.
So that's – and I wonder, Kevin, like could a guy like Ronnie Lott play today?
Oh.
He was – to me, he was a good enough cover guy too, but he wouldn't be the same Ronnie Lott we saw.
He could be what Jamal Adams is. He's basically Jamal Adams.
Yeah.
Or I'll even take it a step further and really go Jimmy Johnson and spin down. Ronnie Lott would be one hell of a linebacker in the league right now.
Darren
you'd have to add some weight.
But that's all – if you look at Jamal Adams, that's all he is.
Right.
Jamal Adams is a linebacker.
Yeah, he's not a coverage guy.
Yeah,
they
put him at linebacker depth.
Guys would have had different, you know, different positions. And it's kind of weird where – you'd think football is one of those games where you think, okay, guys are just getting bigger, stronger, faster. But now we're seeing, in terms of size, man, that 350-pound hulking nose tackle, he's not extinct. He's becoming close to being an endangered species now.
Yeah.
Because you got to have guys up front. Yeah, you can be 330, but if you're 330, you better be able to move and slant and play all the pass rush games that you got to play to defend these offenses now.
Now, both you guys are Astros fans, right?
Astros!
Yep.
All right, so I wanted to get kind of the overview take of that, but the documentary is really good. You got to check it out. I'm going to check out the other two parts, but parts 3 and 4 are fantastic. That team was crazy. They were nuts. They were partiers. They were all over the place, and you get some good stories, but including the flight back from Houston in Game 6. But 86 Houston Mets for NL Championship to go to the World Series. I forgot. I remember at the time, and obviously I've gone back and looked at some stuff after, but really, really forgot how close Houston was to finishing that thing off. They're up 3-0 in the ninth inning, and they're down 3-2. But at that point, you got Mike Scott going in Game 7, and that could have been a whole different thing.
86 and 80 are the 2 years in that era where Astros fans will tell you they should have got it one of those years,
right?
Either 80 or 86.
I will say this, though. If you would have won it in 86, it'll be like the only title you have. There'd be people in history that would go back and say you won it because you cheated. And I'm talking about Mike Scott and the sandpaper. You see how many of those baseballs, did you watch it, Jeff, were scuffed?
Yeah. And, well, I didn't watch the documentary, but I know what you're talking about. But, yeah, that's another one of those things with, you know, I mean, Gaylord Perry's in the Hall of Fame, so why are we
– Fair enough.
Why are we bad-mouthing guys for doctor of baseball?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They're cheaters, racists. We got Ty Cobb. We got all types of people in the Baseball Hall of Fame. So – just take a look at that. Appreciate what some of the talent we have in terms of receivers, the body control, and some of the ways they're getting 2 feet in the end zone and understanding that. And the tap dancing is that definitely illustrates.
Hey, real quick
that.
On that, while I'm thinking about him, like, you remember Ed Harris in the Major League movie? Like, was that character just like a rib on Gaylord Perry?
Total, absolutely.
I always thought
with a little Charlie Huffman.
Okay, I always thought that, but I never had anybody confirm. But I always thought that was a rib on Gaylord Perry.
Are you kidding me? With all the Ben Gay and stuff he had all
like
over
Tabasco
his body,
in the nose,
Tabasco in the nose, get my snot running down. We are at Craft House Kitchen and Tap, Nelson Shopping Center. It's 242 North LBJ Drive. Get on out here and come say hi. We're going to be out here until 6:30. We're going to do Beat the Pluck with Dave Paul coming up at 5. Up next, Off the Record, the Colts. Sam could be a part of this. We know Wentz is definitely going to be a part of this, but looks like they could be doing a little Hard Knocks in season. We'll get into that up next.
D.D. Mega doo-doo, I'm sorry, Mangudu.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get to bring the egg comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. And thing sucks.
KD, welcome to another edition of Off the Record. On the Thursday night football game last night, gentlemen, the NFL made an announcement that they're going to have an in-season version of Hard Knocks, which is the HBO show that takes you behind the scenes of training camp. It's been on for a while, and it's been a fan favorite, I should say, for a lot of NFL fans. Where now they're going to bring a Hard Knocks formula to the actual regular season, and the Colts are going to be the featured team. The Colts do have a lot of internal drama with the Carson Wentz situation. I'm sure Sam Ehlinger will end up becoming a featured star or storyline on this new in-season version of Hard Knocks. So there you go. It's going to premiere November 17th, and it's going to be on HBO. Oh,
nice.
HBO Max. If you guys have HBO Max, I do.
Indeed.
And you got to get HBO Max.
Now, if you have HBO, you just get HBO Max. I mean, with most of these packages, right?
Yeah, most of your cable providers, I'm sure it comes all as one package. But, I mean, the only thing that's bad about HBO Max, their user interface is terrible. It's just horrible.
Yeah, it's a little bit difficult to navigate.
Oh, it's bad. It's just old school. They just hired the people from Netflix to do their user interface. But other than that, the content is pretty damn good.
Okay.
All right, that's what we're focused on.
By user interface, you mean the screen?
Just the way you work. You can. Well, you got to know how you, you scroll through different things and kind of work your way through the actual app itself.
I don't like the ones that you already pay for it. And so you already pay for the channel, and then you get to their on-demand, and it's like, all right, I have this, but they're like, we're still going to have you
ESPN Plus.
Watch commercials. I'm like, no, I paid for this.
I agree.
Nah, you would cheat and not tape it originally.
Have either of you guys watched the All or Nothing that comes on Amazon Prime?
I have not. I've had people recommend it.
It's so much better than Hard Knocks.
Okay.
Like, Hard Knocks might be the most overrated thing about the NFL, and I'm not making that up. Everybody's like, oh, you're in for Hard Knocks. How many episodes is Hard Knocks? What, Rod? What, probably
six
episodes?
Six,
here's
like
the thing.
Maybe one of those is worth watching.
Here's the thing with Hard Knocks, though, because I understand what you're saying, but I do love it, and I do watch it. You know why? The same reason I liked Airplane Food when I was a kid. Because you're up there, and you get to a point that you're hungry, and even psychologically, especially as a kid, you can go, what if I starve up here? Which you know is not going to happen, but it's the only thing you have. Okay. We're so hungry and thirsty when Hard Knock comes on. Hard Knocks comes on because we've been waiting all this time. Same reason that we watch a preseason game or even a college football game in week zero and say, I would never watch this in week seven.
It's a good point.
Kevin, can I make an analogy to Hard Knocks that might make you slightly uncomfortable?
Please.
Hard Knocks reminds me a lot of the Real World.
Oh, wow.
There was a time.
Watch yourself.
It's not that bad.
There was a time. No,
it's
there
much
was a
better
time,
than that, trust me.
There was a time, for me, there was a time where that show was like, I love this. I got to watch it. It's must-watch TV. And then there gets to a point where I'm like, you're just living off the name. It's not.
I believe
no,
the term is
no
jump the shark.
Here.
Jump the shark.
And I don't know when it happened, but it's just there's, the no, shark. There's no, like, you go back and watch those first, I don't know.
It's whenever they had Fonzie on.
those three, four seasons of Hard, those first three, four
no,
seasons
right.
of Hard Knocks.
Yeah. I agree with you.
It's great. But now I watch it, I'm like.
It's lost not, some
it
of its cachet.
Lost
it
doesn't do much.
It's lost some of its cachet.
I'm telling you guys, if you get a chance, if either of y'all have Amazon Prime, I got to log in, so I'll help you guys out.
Okay.
All or Nothing. Go watch a couple of seasons of All or Nothing.
Is All or Nothing
what's so good
the one,
it?
The college one, or the pro one? Is it?
It's
is,
the pro one. So they basically they follow the team
throughout
the season, and then at the end of the season, you basically get your Hard Knocks right there. So you can binge watch it all at once.
Oh, that's much better.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is
well,
bad.
That's part of it, but I just think the content in there is so much better. Following the team throughout the season, it's so much better than going
then
through.
Just those 4 weeks that they get to follow them in the offseason. No, I agree with you. I agree with you also about I think it's jumped the shark. I think they'll keep doing it because it's the NFL.
It's an institution.
And like KD said,
franchise.
Same reason they do the Pro Bowl. Nobody cares about the Pro Bowl. But comparatively, the Pro Bowl gets way better ratings than some of the other all-star festivities for other sports.
Yeah.
Real football fans just don't care about it. Just like real football fans don't care about Hard Knocks anymore. Yeah. But comparatively, it actually gets decent ratings for HBO.
It's the end of the desert, and you'll take anything. To where 2 days later, if they gave you the same bottle of water, you'd say, this is green. I don't care. It's
Eddie,
liquid when you get to the end.
Is that the Eddie Murphy bit about Steven starving and somebody throws you a cracker?
Yeah.
That's the best cracker I ever had.
Yes.
You're damn right it is.
God, it's a good cracker.
All right, so it is Monday. November 17th. I don't actually know what day it is. I take that back. November 17th at, we don't know exactly, I think 9 p.m. our time, 10 p.m. Eastern. But HBO, you can stream it on their HBO Max service.
It'll be a Wednesday, Rod.
Thank you very much for letting me know that. Thanks for the diligence there.
It's the kind of stuff I'm here for.
It's the nuggets he drops.
Yeah, but honestly, I think Carson Wentz and Sam Ellinger will probably be the two top head storylines.
I would
that.
Think so.
I mean, I don't think – what's the other interesting thing about the Colts?
I mean, maybe if there's a personality in there with a lineman or something like that, but that's it.
I think that's it, pretty much. And not saying they're going to be battling it out of the quarterback competition
no.
in terms of storyline.
Sam, what he's coming off of
so
with his brother,
off of this,
that's perfect for TV.
That's a lot of – exactly.